some of you are off to one side. And if I move the picture over that way, then I lose the other side. So that's too bad. I would like to be able to see you all. I see many familiar faces, and it's very good to see you again. It's been quite a while. I see some new faces to me, and I'm glad to be practicing with you in this very odd space, actually. I thought by now I'd be used to it, but I'm not. It's still weird. The upside is, I think maybe here at Valley Streams and also in our Sangha, more people than usual can join us. We have a number of people from Europe who show up virtually for Dharma Talk and Zazen, which is quite lovely. So there's pluses and minuses, as with so many other things. I'd like to start with a, well, I started already, but anyway, I'd like to start with a prayer that I recently learned that I think some of you may have known for a long time. I was recently watching His Holiness the Dalai Lama, who has quite a few videos on YouTube, and I quite recommend them. Recently, he did a series, I think three days of teachings on entering the Buddha way, and they're quite delightful. And he introduced me anyway to a prayer attributed to Shantideva, whom I think a lot of you are familiar with already, that fellow. And it's very simple. It goes, as long as space endures, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel all misery from the world. As long as space endures, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel all misery from the world. As long as space endures, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel all misery from the world. I've taken to that prayer, and I find myself reciting it to myself very often during the day. It's a perfect encapsulation and summation of the Bodhisattva path. And something about it is a little more connecting to that path than some other more abstract approaches. After all, when we think about limitless sentient beings and endless stretches of time, it's sort of like kind of out there. But for me, at least, this prayer brings it home. So I recommend it. It's short and easy to recite. It's not the sort of thing we necessarily associate with Zen-style practice. But it's important to remember that our practice depends completely and equally on you know, the two wings of Buddha Dharma, which are, of course, wisdom and compassion. And some people have said, I've heard it said, that Zen is a little short on the compassion side. And if that's so, I'm not, I don't know if that's so, but if that is so, it's our responsibility to take that in hand. Of course, it's true that compassion without wisdom can actually be destructive. Yeah. So can wisdom without compassion. So both are essential. And my experience is that our practice of just sitting is a cauldron, a nursery for developing both. The wisdom side, of course, has to do with coming to know reality. And over the millennia, Buddha Dharma has done a pretty good job of describing how reality is obscured by our long-standing mental habits. In our study hour here at Harper Street, our now virtual study hour, we're looking at the Sandhi Nirmochana Sutra, which I think some of you know. It's one of the foundational sutras of Yogacara Buddhism, sometimes called mind only. And Vajra Buddhism does a good job of making a very succinct digest of the Buddha way. And seeing how there is such a thing as reality, and reality in its true sense is absolutely free of anything that we can cook up in our thinking mind and impose upon it. Another word for reality is dependent co-arising. The universe consists of dependently co-arisen phenomena from right here inside us all the way to the farthest extent of the universe, whatever that is. There is nothing but dependently co-arisen phenomena. So that's reality. And unfortunately, our tendency is to invent a variety of elaborate and convincing fictions which we place upon that universe of dependent co-arising. And the main one of those, of course, is that my existence and your existence do not touch. And I'm going to get right down to it. Mine is up here, and all the rest of you are down here somewhere. Sorry about that. And that's the most persistent fantasy that we have. And boy, that's a toughie. And its roots, we are told, are profoundly unconscious. So you can't just simply snap your fingers and get rid of it. And according to Yogacara, what's necessary is what they call the asraya paravritti in Sanskrit. The asraya is like the basis on which everything rests. And para plus a plus vritti means to reverse, to turn around completely. And this means the obscuring vision that has me thinking that my existence is ontologically separate from every other existence. That fantasy needs to be seen through. So one way we approach that, of course, is in our sitting practice, which you might say is established in the truth of no separation. Without our having to cook that up intellectually or keep that in focus or doing anything of the kind, the practice of just sitting is allowing reality to manifest. And as it manifests, it is purely dependent polarizing. And our sitting teaches us not to be misled by all of our habits of thinking otherwise. Thinking of this universe as a wasteland of ontologically separate entities. And I think the reason that so many of us come back again and again to this practice is because our heart of hearts is nourished and made peaceful by this encounter with reality as it is, minus all of the mental activity, what the great Nagarjuna called the prapancha, which means endless elaboration, endless stories, again and again, over and over, same stuff. And to enter this path that Buddha pointed out for us, we have to develop enough trust that we can do this practice wholeheartedly. Sometimes, yes, that trust can be called faith, but really, trust is the best word for it. And it's that trust that allows us to take our seat wholeheartedly in the midst of our upwelling life. And trust that this body-mind is introducing itself over and over again to things as they are, rather than the running script that we've cooked up. And in our Zen way is, we don't necessarily say that, well, if you do that enough, then the asraya paravritti will happen and everything will be great. We don't actually say that. We say that the asraya paravritti is happening all the time. And sometimes we use the expression body-mind falling away. It's the same. This is happening all the time. It is in the nature of the body-mind to constantly fall away. the most succinct, and if you will allow, the sweetest experience of that is in just sitting. Allowing phenomena to arise and pass away. And there is a profound peace in that practice. Just as there is a profound peace in things as they are. And His Holiness was saying, committing our body-mind, as described in that prayer, also confers tremendous peace. Because from that perspective, from the perspective of I will accompany all sentient beings until the very last one, to liberation. Like, there is then absolutely nothing else to worry about. There is no further concern. That is the career of the Bodhisattva, on which all of you have embarked, or maybe are embarking over and over again. So pardon the expression, the radiance of the merit here is blinding. It's pretty incredible. Just sitting here with you, the cramped and artificial boundaries of what we take for the self are revealed to be just full of holes. Universe, the living universe, passing in and out of us, moment after moment, breath after breath. It's pretty great. I don't know what a greater practice than that would be. His Holiness also said, put very succinctly, when you remove all kleshas, and you may know that word, the Sanskrit word klesha, which means, defilements, afflictions, etc. Remove all of those, and there's nirvana. So that's all we have to do, just get rid of all kleshas. And one very straightforward way to engage in that practice is just sitting. When, as they say, all precepts are kept when you sit. All kleshas are dispelled. And if you're tempted to think, yeah, well, wait a minute, my sitting's not like that, then I would say that our invitation, Buddha's an ancestor's invitation to us, is just let that stuff go. Don't bother about a thing. no matter how persistent that little voice is, oh, my sitting's not like that. Just let it go. I see Joshua and Laura have some four-legged company there. I'm sorry, I envy you. We've taken to, well, that is when we still had, well, we, the residents here, we get together in the Zendo, and we have a dog, so the dog accompanies us when she feels like it. And before, we had some of our other Sangha members brought their animals to Zazen with us, and I realized that perhaps some of our Japanese colleagues might look askance at that. I was like, well, that's the way things are here. So the animals come in and rejoice in the Dharma right along with us. And meanwhile, of course, we have this funny business with public health going on. And one of our human tendencies is sometimes to get a little complacent. But if that tendency was present, now I think not so much. We don't need any more reminder that our precious life needs taking care of. And should not be taken for granted. Our sangha here in San Francisco is pretty small, and so far everyone is healthy, more or less. So we hope that will continue, but we know there are no guarantees. We're being as careful as we can, and I hope all of you are as well. Myself and another resident are definitely in the vulnerable zone as far as age is concerned. So we're trying to watch our P's and Q's. And at the same time, not let our concern obscure for us the fact that the career of the Bodhisattva, a lifetime is barely a blink. Professor Robert Thurman, whom I'm also a fan, likes to say that although there's a version of things that holds that eventually everyone will be enlightened and then everything will kind of disappear, he says he kind of doesn't think it's like that. His impression is that the career of the Bodhisattva is effectively infinite. And what better career could there be? You mean we have to keep coming back and helping other beings? Well, actually, yes. I actually don't mind. I'm kind of looking forward to it and hoping to get better at it. sometimes the ability to lay one's hands on the exactly needed skillful means doesn't seem to be isn't there at the snap of fingers. Well, it's like, oh, okay. Keep trying. And on the basis of our ineffable and indestructible connection with one another, try to be available to help. It won't do to try and figure out ahead of time how that's going to be. So just try to be available. My brother is a Roman Catholic priest, and one of his parishes, particularly if it were kind of late at night and the phone would ring or someone would come to the door, the pastor would say, "God calling," or "Jesus is at the door." That's a pretty good attitude, actually. As long as space endures, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the misery of the world. That about sums it up, I think. As I said, I can't necessarily see all of you, but I think I can hear all of you. So if anyone has a question or comment, please feel free. I think you can unmute yourself.
Just raise your hand and unmute yourself.
You can wave frantically at your camera.
You know, I have a question. When,
who's Keith?
This is Oscar.
Oh, hi, Oscar. There you are.
I might be, yeah.
It looks like you're in Japan.
I was.
Oh.
This is a memory.
I see. All right. Oh, very nice. Very nice. Yeah, good memory.
Yes. So, I think I've heard you mention once or twice before the falling away of body and mind. And when you say body and mind are constantly falling away, how is it that body and mind are constantly falling away?
Well, one way to put it is, can we grasp? We could say either, but it's actually, that's one suchness. Body, mind is a single suchness. And is it graspable? I don't think so. I can't. So it's something happening again and again and again, over and over, and there's nothing there to grasp.
So I understand. But it's not always evident that body and mind are always falling away. And since they don't, they're ungraspable anyway, how are they falling away if we're not, if we're convinced that they are quite stable?
Are you? I think?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Well, I should say sometimes.
Right, and then, sooner or later, the teaching arises, oh, wait, there's nothing there to grasp. And that is quite freeing, actually.
Thank you for your answer.
You're welcome.
I think Larry has his hand raised.
Okay, let's see if I can find Larry. Larry. Is that Lawrence's iPad? There he is. You have to unmute, Larry. There you go. There you go.
Thank you. Reverend Mio, grateful to hear those words from you. It seems like from my ears, you went right to the core of our teaching with your talk this evening, and I appreciate it very much. You know, from time to time, I've come and I've talked to you either in Dokusan or after Dharma talks, and try and not bring up, you know, the mundane affairs of everyday life. But when I thought there was something significant in my practice, I would come and I'd ask you about it. And more often than not, it was you had the same advice for me, which was great. Now let it go. And I will confess to you that never sit well, never sat well with me, because I thought that was something significant there, or I wouldn't have mentioned it. But I will share with you that I'm starting to think that you've got something there.
Well, I didn't mean to suggest that it wasn't significant. And the more significant it is, the more you need to let it go.
I trust that you are correct. I do have a better understanding of that now.
Good.
May I ask you, I don't know if it's appropriate, so if it's not, just tell me, because you didn't raise this issue in your talk, but since you're here right now in front of us, my question, if you'd like to entertain it, would be when we talk about the light, the Buddha nature, the emptiness of our mind. We talk not only, the teachers talk not only about emptiness, but luminous. The luminosity, clear and awake. And I have a thought about that, but I'm not sure. And I wonder, would you have any comment on what is meant by the luminous mind?
Well, just a couple of things. You know, in Vajrayana, they say that the ultimate nature of the universe is not just light, but clear light. So that isn't the kind of light that shines on something from some source. It is light completely without color and completely pervasive. That's one thing. And another thing is that the great Zen master, Yunnan, whom I've quoted before, has also said, you know, you've all got a light. But he says, I'm sure some of you know, if you look at it, you can't see it. It's dark and dim. So then he asks, what is everybody's light? And no one, his assembly does not reply. So he says, it's the front door. It's the garage.
Mm.
So everybody has a light, but when you look for it, you can't see it.
Thank you.
Linda Decker has her hand raised.
And there's Linda. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Feliz Navidad.
Say it again.
Just wishing you a happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you.
Can you point me to Robert Thurman's discussion on how we're in it for the long haul? Because I was just sitting in meditation tonight and thinking about that.
Uh-huh.
Is that something you can remember where you read it or heard it?
Well, you know, he's quite a presence on YouTube and other such places, and I've listened to enough of his videos that I'm afraid I can't figure out where he said that, but he says it more than once. So if you feel like listening to him, and personally I could listen to him all day, eventually he will say that, because he usually winds up repeating himself. His favorite themes come back again and again, sort of like me, I guess.
I think I should watch him more. I believe it was he and the Buddhism Without Belief guy.
Stephen Batchelor?
Yeah, he and Stephen Batchelor did a conversation about reincarnation.
Uh-huh.
That is really interesting.
We kind of prefer the term rebirth, but yes, yeah, I bet that was quite an interesting conversation.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for the talk tonight.
Sure.
Reverend Soan, Zenin would like to speak.
There he is. Hello.
Hello, Mio.
Hi.
A study group. We have a couple of study groups going at the moment. We have a class, I guess you would call it. We're reading a book called The Heart of Buddha's Teaching by Thich Nhat Hanh, and presenting Four Noble Truths and Eightfold Path. And or at least that's the part we're reading. And you mentioned sort of big storehouse of our difficult and intractable karma. And he mentioned that as well. His discussion actually throughout what we're reading seems to be quite influenced by a Yogacara perspective. And so he talks about what we're facing is these constantly ripening seeds from the alaya, the storehouse. And like being under fire or something like that. Yeah, he doesn't use that word. I made that. But then he also says, and I'm probably misquoting him. I'm pretty sure about the part I just said, but. He seems to say that at the same time, sort of or on a parallel track, there are seeds of Buddha ripening, mm-hmm. And maybe we should look for or be ready to receive that kind of ripening as well. Mm-hmm. There was one passage that was seemed to be saying something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if this is turning into a question or not, but maybe you could say something about I'm pretty familiar with the ripening of thieves in the Alaya, which when you generally hear about it, it doesn't sound like, you know, it sounds like that's a lot of our difficult past result of our difficult past action. Mm-hmm. Is there a sense that there's also a source of our enlightened past action ripening?
Absolutely. Those seeds are also ripening, and that's why we're here. That's why we were born in a place and a time where we could hear Buddha Dharma and actually put it into practice. Were none of us too crippled or too ill or too far in extremis that we can't do that. And that is also seeds ripening. So all of you who are within the sound of Buddha's voice, so to speak, are enjoying the ripening of the seeds of liberation. So that's definitely also happening, right along with all of the little mosquitoes, bodies flying around of stuff that looks quite a bit less wholesome. So I hope we can all have confidence in that, because that is pretty demonstrably true. Todd-san.
Yo-san, hey.
Hey.
You're again.
Hey.
It's been a
while.
Yeah. And thank you to the group for letting me be here. I know Jim, but I know very few of the rest of you. So, Neil, question. You mentioned the two wings of Zen, of Buddhism, really. Compassion and wisdom. And it sounded like you were saying Zen doesn't really emphasize the compassion element that much. But how do those arise separately? Is it possible for them to arise separately even?
Yeah, not really. The notion that Zen is lopsided on the wisdom side is, there's some truth to that, I would say. But, the bird is still flying. It's just kind of, it's got a tilt to it. So it's important for a Dharma tradition that particularly emphasizes wisdom not to neglect the compassion side. And that means making sure that our spiritual heart is accessible to others, and we are letting that heart be touched by the sufferings of other beings. Otherwise, wisdom by itself gets very cold. And if the only response that we have, for instance, if someone comes to us and says, well, you know, I'm having a really bad time and I'm suffering, and all we can do is, you know, yell and hit them with a stick. It's like, okay, that's not probably enough. Okay? That means, and that may be expressive of quite an extraordinary wisdom, body-mind wisdom emerging in that moment. But if that's all we can do, then I think something is a little lopsided.
I see what you mean, yeah. So some of the ancient teachers, for instance, were well known for that sort of attitude.
Well, we have the stories, and that's only a snapshot of their lives. And it's possible that they were also deeply compassionate. Sure. And if sometimes that compassion manifested in a way that looked sort of harsh, well, okay, let's take that under advisement.
Thank you.
See, I don't see any more hands.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, suddenly things are quiet and peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm okay with stopping here, if that's okay with everybody.